Guide us, gracious God, by your word, into a deeper understanding of your love for us. Amen. Our scripture reading today is from Psalms 72, verses 1 through 7 and 10 through 14. You can find this in your pew Bible on page 908. Endow the king with your justice, O God, the royal son with your righteousness. May he judge your people in righteousness, your afflicted ones with justice. May the mountains bring prosperity to the people, the hills the fruit of righteousness. May he defend the afflicted among the people and save the children of the needy. May he crush the oppressor. May he endure as long as the sun, as long as the moon, through all generations. May he be like rain falling on a mown field, like showers watering the earth. In his days may the righteous flourish and prosper abound until the moon is no more. May the kings of Tarshish and of distant shores bring tribute to him. May the kings of Sheba and Seba present him gifts. May all kings bow down to him and all nations serve him. For he will deliver the needy who cry out, the afflicted who have no one to help. He will take pity on the weak and the needy and save the needy from death. He will rescue them from oppression and violence, for his precious is their blood in his sight. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God.
Thank you, Tammy. Our second reading today is from the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 2, beginning at verse 1. After Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea during the time of King Herod, Magi came from the east, came to Jerusalem and asked, "Where is the one who has been born King of the Jews? We saw his star when it rose and have come to worship him." When King Herod heard this, he was disturbed, and all Jerusalem with him. When he had called together all the people's chief priests and teachers of the law, he asked them where this Messiah was to be born. "In Bethlehem in Judea," they replied, "for this is what the prophet has written. But you, Bethlehem, and the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah. For out of you will come a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel." Then Herod called the Magi secretly and found out from them the exact time the star had appeared. He sent them to Bethlehem and said, "Go and search carefully for the child. As soon as you find him, report to me, so that I too may go and worship him." After they had heard the king, they went on their way. And the star they had seen when it rose went ahead of them until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they were overjoyed. On coming to the house, they saw the child with his mother Mary, and they bowed down and worshiped him. Then they opened their treasures and presented him with gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And having been warned in a dream not to go back to Herod, they return to their country by another route. This is the word of the Lord. I am excited to share a story with you today that I have not shared. And I was saying to Todd in the car on the way here that it's a lengthy story. I'll try not to be as lengthy as I could be. And I remind myself that it's not for me I shared, it's actually for some of you, hopefully all of you, that God hopefully speaks through those stories, even the nativity story I shared with you, which I'm still hearing about, by the way. So what I wanted to tell you about today is the story of how I was called to ministry. You may have heard bits and pieces of that or know some of that from knowing me over the last few years as I preached as a guest or that from the community. But I don't think I've told you the whole thing. I've said that my dad was a pastor, and that, of course, is where the story always begins for a pastor's kid. Some of you know that. Raised as a pastor's kid, going into the ministry was something I actually tried to avoid for quite some time. This seems to be a trend for PKs. None of my kids seem particularly inclined, though there are at least a couple of them that I think would be really good at it. When you grow up in the church as a PK, especially as the oldest child and all of that, everyone knows your business. I see a couple people who know exactly what that's like. I was also very aware my dad was out for evening meetings or just had a lot of responsibilities that were out of, you know, regular hours. And while I know he tried to keep these things to a minimum, he had a good commitment to the churches that he served. But at age 19, and to some extent before that, as I observed my younger brother and his teenage friends, and he never really had much to do, I really began to think a lot about youth ministry in particular. So the first part of the story begins at the church where my dad was serving. When I was about 19, I remember very clearly sitting in one of the back pews in the sanctuary, and it was an early morning worship service, and it was Mission Sunday, much like when we have Village of Hope come and speak to us. I listened to the missionary who spoke and worshiped with the band and looked around at everything the church was doing and realized I just wanted to be a part of all of it, especially on a Sunday like that when there is a lot going on. And so as I sat there considering that, I asked myself a good question, one I told my own kids, think about, you know, the things that you like to do and the things that you're good at. I asked myself, what kind of job do I need to be able to do all of these things? I was interested in youth ministry, I was interested in mission and music and kids and teaching, whatever. And suddenly it just came upon me and I said, oh no. It was like I was hit over the head and said, well, when you're a pastor, you get to do a lot of those things, a whole variety of things that's kind of unusual for other jobs. So I made sure that my ears remained very closed and my heart remained very hard. I still didn't want any part of ministry except for youth ministry. I was kind of coming around to. One of the former pastors there even tried to talk to me at 19 or 20 and said, you know, have you ever thought about being a minister or, you know, the Presbyterian Church and that kind of thing? And I said, no, I'm just going to be a youth pastor. And he said, okay. Well, he's still around. Many years passed, and we don't have time for the ups and downs of life through all of those years, but all that to say, I did work in the church. I just worked with teenagers. And during that time, I was a youth pastor and I was still young enough to take trips and stay up all night. And oh my goodness, we didn't yet have children. You might remember I told you I was a realtor at one point. I stepped away from church ministry, all those trips and overnighters and all that good stuff, and just wanted to find something else to do. And that only lasted about a year. And then I had my first child, Grace, and was a stay-at-home mom for quite some time. And that's where the story gets a little more interesting. Like many younger people do, or younger couples do, after we had our first, we wanted to find a church again to attend. And by attend, I mean attend. Attend, not help, not serve or teach or do anything like that. And I still thought I was avoiding ministry. In time, Grace and I, as her dad was deployed, ended up at Orenco Church as a visitor, as an attender, where most of you know I served for 14 years. As I sat in the church one of my first weeks there with baby Grace, the pastor and one of the elders stood up and they began to talk about the budget, and they did this whole presentation, and I kind of zoned out. I was just attending, visiting, remember? And during that presentation, they said they were saving money in order to hire a youth pastor. I even remember sitting in the pew just going, you know. I heard nothing else that was said. God had led me to the right place in God's timing in order to be where I needed to be. It wasn't my desire to do all of this again, but I saw all these teenagers sitting around with nothing to do and without leadership, and there I was. But I had a daughter who was about a year and a half, a husband who was deployed, but I knew the Lord was speaking to me. So I applied for the job. But before I got the job, I went on a trip. While the rest of the story took place over many years, this story only takes a couple of months in time. When God decides to reveal himself to you or speak to you, he reveals himself to you and speaks to you. And it's in God's own perfect timing, and you can't predict where it will be or when, and God goes to great lengths to do so, even crossing unusual spaces and times and places to do so. So this trip was to attend my friend's ordination service in New York City. And he had called to invite me, and of course I declined. Do you see how stubborn I am through all of these stories? All of the, what the Bible calls the concerns of the world, were all of my reasons for not going. I was raising my daughter, I was a single mom, the cost of a plane ticket, the winter weather, it was New York, the challenges of having a baby and all of that. Plus, I was trying to avoid any further communication God may have on this matter, right? And what God thought his plans might be. Well, my friend Nate called back a couple of times and finally said, "We're going to pay your way out here so that you can actually get here." And somehow I said yes. I had run out of excuses. I left Grace with my parents for the weekend, and I hopped on a red eye and I flew to New York by myself. It was a busy time for my friend, and he had this church where we folded bulletins and we straightened up pews and did all the churchy things that we needed to do before this big service, where you had a lot of different people there. I didn't know a lot about the service until the time came. Nate sat me right in the front row next to his grandmother, of course. And in spite of this being a Unitarian church, there were a lot of things familiar to me about the service. There were pastors in robes and written responses. There were, you know, hymns I recognized, and on the wall there was even a mural of Jesus washing his disciples' feet. My friend had so many friends and colleagues there who, in large part, had helped him see where he needed to be, and he had counted me as one of those, and that's why he plopped me in that front row. The preacher during the service was an African-American woman who was a pastor. To this day, I have no idea who she was, because as she approached the pulpit and as she began to speak, I didn't hear anything else that she had to say that day. And her words were, "What is calling?" I began to cry. The grandmother was patting my knee. I heard very little of the rest of the service, and when it was all finished, I said to my friend, "Well, I guess I'm going to have to figure out how to go to seminary." He was really pleased. I'll never forget, and I'll always be really grateful to him who knew exactly what he was doing. And in 2019, he came out to my own ordination service so many years after we were in high school and in youth group together. That was 13 years after his ordination service. Now, that was a lengthy story and one I usually don't tell all of the details of, but my point I wanted to make to you today is just as the shepherd looks for the one sheep who was lost, God will go to great lengths to find you and to communicate to you. And God, trust me, reaches across spaces and places we've never considered being in order to do so. In this first Sunday of the new year, I'll just touch briefly on our gospel reading today, because there's some surprises despite how familiar it is to all of us. And just like my story, I think these surprises make us more aware of how God works in other people's lives, and how God works in our very own lives. We've read all the pieces over many weeks surrounding this story, focusing on the appearances of the angels to Mary and Joseph and Zechariah. We read all the stories of Christ's birth on Christmas Eve, and last Sunday we spoke of the time of King Herod. So we're told wise men from the east follow this star and bring gifts to Jesus in the manger. But as I read this text, I'm struck that it says very clearly, they followed the star to Jerusalem instead of Bethlehem. What were they doing there exactly? Why did they stop there first? Didn't the star, as it were, take them all the way to Bethlehem, where Jesus was to be born? It seems the wise men have missed the mark by 5 miles or so. So they ask King Herod where the baby is, and the king inquires of all the scribes and the chief priests and the people who know the Hebrew texts where the Messiah is to be born. And how do the Magi find out where he is to be born? They find out from the Hebrew scriptures, from the prophecy. Jesus came to fulfill the law, and as we read in the prophet Micah, but you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah, for out of you will come a ruler who will shepherd my people, Israel. The wise men, the Magi, just like all of us, must see Jesus as this fulfillment of this plan that God had all along. And Matthew is showing us Jesus, this Jew in the line of King David, who is called Emmanuel, God with us, fulfills this prophecy and is God's presence among us. This story for Jesus, just like the one I shared, like all of our stories, starts before we're even aware. We may think nothing's going on. Starts before we are all aware and is put into motion. As I said last week, God is working for the good of all of those who love God and who are called according to his purposes. And God's will really is revealed in the perfect time. There is no other time. We all have stories like this. The wise men, the Magi, needed to realize this baby was something special and truly was the Messiah. When the Magi approach Herod, they ask about the location of the king of the Jews. I owe some of these insights to a former Jewish scholar and Catholic priest who says these three strangers, without even knowing it, are telling Herod that his time is up. They are announcing the true king has come, and they are speaking truth to power. That's the second surprise in this text. As they follow the star, they've ended up right in the lap of King Herod. And we talked about him last week, and he's paranoid, and he's all stirred up to find that someone else, this baby who has been born, is called king and even is to be worshipped. They are on their way to worship him. Herod orders the death of all the baby boys, 2 and under, shortly after that. Herod tells the Magi to come back and to report to him, of course, so he can go and worship this baby. But they don't. Time goes by, and that's when Herod, in his paranoia, begins to order those children's deaths. Now here's a third surprise. While these men, and we assume there's three, are not Jewish and they don't know this prophecy or understand these Hebrew scriptures, God opens a way for them to visit and meet this light in the darkness, quite literally, and to meet this baby boy, Jesus. At Christ's birth, God is already bringing together Jews and Gentiles. He's already extending those boundaries. God is communicating this gift is for everyone. And not only that, but to reach these three kings or magi or astrologers of some sort, reading the stars, the God of all creation works through creation to reach them through their understanding of the stars. It's as astounding a moment as me being called to ministry in a Unitarian church. It's as astounding a moment as many of you have experienced as God has reached out for you in some way. There was a story that caught my attention right after Christmas. A man in Italy was on the run. He was a fugitive and he had resisted arrest for assaulting an officer. And meanwhile, it was still Christmas, and the mayor of this town was celebrating and was viewing this outdoor nativity with all of its realistic-looking pieces, and it was life-size. There was hay, and there was a manger much like that, and there were lifelike portrayals for Jesus' birth. And so as he stood there and he enjoyed this nativity, one of the wise men moved. The fugitive had taken shelter in Nativity. What a perfect place to take shelter and to hide out. Be aware in this new year that God works behind the scenes. God works on your behalf, unbeknownst to us, and has a plan. Find yourself there safely within that God's perfect plan, trusting in those details, knowing that all will be revealed at the right time. And know that this gospel, God seeks out all of his children. This gospel, this baby, is for all of us. And so we humbly submit to him. Amen.